Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this beautiful Monday afternoon. If you were in Berkeley Saturday, you know, hope everything went well on the trip back. I know quite a few people that aren't back yet.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some folks that went out there and decided not to fly on 9/11.
Right.
So, I mean, because it is the 22nd anniversary of 9/11. So that is something to keep in mind as the day goes on. But if you made it to Berkeley, love to hear from you if you're awake enough to be able to talk about that.
Well, there was a great crowd there, right?
There really was a great Auburn crowd. We saw it. If you watched any of the Giants game on Friday night, man, there was a lot
you
of
mean the
orange.
Cowboys game?
Huh?
You mean the Cowboys game?
No, I mean the San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
The San Francisco Giants game.
Okay.
There was a lot of orange in the crowd that wasn't Giants orange.
Yeah,
there was a lot of Auburn orange there at Giants Stadium on Friday night.
Yeah, the game where Blake Sable homered. Giants get the 9-8 win. We know a couple of people that were at that game that are going to be on the show later in the week. Who did anyone from the website make the trip out
Stoltz
there?
Stoltz is out there. I don't think he went to the baseball game, though. He did play at whatever the famous course is out there. I don't know which one it was. I'm not a golf person. But
You got some golf in?
Oh, yeah.
All right, cool. Well, glad to hear it.
But it was, great Auburn crowd that fortunately for them and for Auburn didn't have to make that long trip back after a loss. It looked like that for a large portion of the ball game. And, much better an ugly win than, any kind of loss was going to be very bad, and that could have been a very ugly loss. So you hope you can learn. It's much better to be learning after a win, and that's what Auburn has, that late score to give them the 14-10 win over the Cal Golden Bears on Saturday night. So we're just underway, and we are on the road at one of our favorite locations, Franklin Tire, here on East University Drive. They've been taking care of folks in their vehicles for over a half century, over four decades here at this location. Anytime you need anything seen about with your vehicle, minor to major, and body work as well, they can take care of it and do a great job here at Franklin.
I could use some body work.
Well, on your car.
Talking
about the car. They can't help you.
You're the least of us. I gave you the chair with the least padding.
I was on the Doug show earlier today, and we were talking about how the Drive was going to be on location today. And I mentioned I don't have the exact year correct, but I believe Franklin Tire and Auto actually predates the invention of the automobile. Correct? Like they used to.
It feels like it. I think it's 1970.
I believe they used to fix horses.
Is that right?
Here,
David?
I believe there
what,
was
1970.
They used to be able to take your horse here. And they'd bang on it
that's
a few times, figure out what's
what
wrong.
Some of those vehicles back in the day felt like. I'm telling you that. Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah.
Yeah, my old dart swinger or things like that.
So. We used to see Barney Rubble in here all the time. It's always a pleasure to be here. And, Bill, the phone number that people need to have if you're going to live in the Auburn-Opelika area or if someone you care about is going to live in the Auburn-Opelika area.
821-4572.
You need to have the phone number saved in your phone.
I haven't looked at that in a long time. I haven't had to call that.
24/7 towing service, and during business hours, they can tell you that they can answer some of your questions, or you can bring it in here to the intersection of University and Opelika Road where, they've been here for a very long time. So check out Franklin Tire and Auto. Always one of our favorite places to do the show.
Yeah, so we are here today. We'd love to hear from you. We got Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here with us, and we'll get his thoughts on the game. I mean, it's hard. I mean, there's no way around it. It was not pretty, But Auburn did what they had to do. The defense kept them in there long enough and forced field goal attempts, which fortunately Cal kept missing. But the defense made plays to keep Auburn in the game. And then Auburn, which went into the fourth quarter with Auburn went into the fourth quarter with 122 yards total offense.
That's hard to believe.
122 yards total offense.
What was the number?
38 yards passing going into the final drive of the game.
What was the number Hugh Freeze cited at the press conference? They'd run how many plays when they got the ball in the –
25.
They'd run 25 plays when
Auburn
they started.
Auburn ran 52 in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it was a game where Auburn just could not find any sort of pace.
Well, Auburn
Cal dictated the tempo, I think, is how one of
Cal
the ESPN.
Cal dictated the tempo, but Auburn also kept shooting themselves in the foot offensively with turnovers and penalties.
Yeah, because it wasn't an overwhelming offensive performance by Cal by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
Cal left a few points on the board, missed some makeable field goals, cost themselves points at the end of the first half with the penalty after the guy made. Poor guy. Right, made the 51-yarder there at the end of the first half, but a bunch of field goals that were inside of 51. He was missing them left, missing them right. It was just a frustrating day for Cal special teams. And I thought that the longer the game stayed close, the more it might benefit Cal. But in fact, it was Auburn making the game-winning play in the fourth quarter and then holding Cal off. I thought maybe the most impressive thing Auburn did, honestly, wasn't the – I mean, taking the lead in the fourth quarter, that drive with the Rivaldo Fairweather third down conversion and the touchdown to Fairweather is impressive.
Yes.
But I thought, and I asked Asante about it today, was the drive after the Jarquez fumble at the end of the game, when it seems like Auburn is in clock-killing mode and Cal's not going to get another chance at the ball, and the Jarquez Hunter fumble gives Cal's offense another shot with pretty good field positioning. What, they start that drive on the 31, and then – or no, they started in the 40s. They complete the pass that gets it to the 31, and then the 15-yard penalty moves them to the 16.
Right.
But that drive for the defense to stand tall there, was I the only one in that moment thinking, oh no? Once Auburn gives Cal the ball back in that situation, I've just seen that playoff. I've seen that play out too many times, and it usually benefits the team with the momentum, especially when they're the home underdog.
It was at the Auburn 41-yard line with 4 minutes left, exactly.
Yep.
So, yeah.
I mean, Bill, what was your? I mean, when Auburn fumbles it.
Thought it was most likely done. I mean, you know, I didn't.
You can't ask for that many wishes.
Didn't turn
right?
it off I mean, then, but I mean, it sure felt like, well, that may have been the last chance. That's where Cal could not do what Auburn did at the very end. They couldn't just take it, grind it out.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that they'd lost, maybe the fact that they'd lost Jay Knott, I don't think that was an insignificant loss for them. Their other backs are pretty good, but he's their guy.
And the fact that it was a four-point game and not a three-point game or a one-point game or something where they could have played for the field goal probably influenced it too, because they left points on the board via special teams in the game, missing some field goals. But, no, for Auburn to hang in there and take the lead there at the end and hold off a surge by Cal after the turnover, character building for a team that's – for a team that's full of new guys, you know, and this was their, you know, for a lot of players on that field, this was their first big moment in an Auburn uniform, national television, prime time, Power 5 opponent, prime time in some of the country, late night in other parts
not
of the country, prime time in some major media markets, but not any on this side of the Mississippi River.
Back in my
River.
Student days, it was probably prime time, but not anymore.
Yeah, and by the way, and kudos to the radio crew, I think, for staying up and delivering a really lively broadcast too. You'll talk to Andy tomorrow,
and
I thought they were outstanding on the road and getting the energy out there in a game where they had to fill time a lot of reviews.
The game lasted a long time. I mean, it was a little late getting started. Remember, they started it on ESPN News, trying to wait until the Alabama Texas game was over. So it was about 5 or 10 minutes late getting started, and then was, you know, a long ball game. Ball games are not any shorter this year with the clock running.
Nope.
As a matter of fact, ball games are running a little bit longer.
I don't think
this
the
year.
Intention was to shorten games.
Well, I wish they would have had that intent. The intent was to add more commercial time.
Yeah, the intention was to find more.
They didn't mention that when they were doing it.
No, they didn't. They didn't, but it's made it, for the fans, it's made the game drag even more because there are longer pauses now in games than there used to be. But again, Auburn comes away with a win. SEC.
I'd take, you know what, if it's imperative to have more commercial time, I'd take a longer game. Like if you have to work in,
let them go. Yeah, let them. I mean, now that we're losing plays.
Yeah, exactly. Like at that point, I'd say make the games longer to preserve. Because I understand the ESPN Fox side of it, that they're paying a lot of money in media rights to these conferences, and they want to be able to get their money's worth by selling that time to advertisers. But at the same time, at some point it starts to hurt the product. And speaking of which, ESPN and Disney have that deal. I sent you some details.
Yeah,
of
they
that
do.
Earlier today, but. Or not ESPN, Spectrum, Charter Spectrum and Disney
right.
have a deal. In time for, it was sort of underreported on this, about a million of the 15 million people who lost access to ESPN live.
Yeah, but if you want all the ESPN that you used to have, it's going to cost you a little
more. It's going to cost you a little more, but about a million of the 15 million people who lost access to ESPN a week and a half ago live in the New York City metropolitan area. Jets on Monday Night Football tonight. Aaron Rodgers' debut.
Oh, okay. So that was the urgency.
I think there was some pressure. If you didn't have ESPN in the New York City market for about a million folks tonight, Charter Spectrum was maybe going to be out of the ESPN business for a while. Instead, there's going to be a deal. And I think the deal makes some sense in if you own cable channels, if you're Disney or Paramount or Warner Brothers Discovery, if you're going to be sending top-tier programming to your streaming services, people paying for access to your cable channels should maybe also get access to those streaming services. This deal gives Charter Spectrum subscribers access to Disney Plus at the commercial tier level, ESPN Plus at the commercial tier level.
Yeah, if you're in the upper
that's levels. I think a reasonable trade-off from the cable company perspective is if you're going to be prioritizing, especially the ad-driven side of your streaming service, maybe the cable subscribers need to be having access to that ad-driven service. As part of
it'll make it easier for them than having to go and find another way of subscribing.
And I could see that becoming the norm for some of the other streaming services too. Paramount Plus and Warner Brothers Discovery's Max and Peacock, I think, could all.
The only
be.
Thing is, if you already have that from something else, it's gonna confuse it a little bit because you may want some of those things there, and you have to go. Because with certain providers, you may get those things at no charge, and then you're having to pay extra just to get one piece.
But
so,
I think asking people to pay extra for the ad-free tier, but providing the commercial tier as part of a pre-existing subscription, I think that could be something that a compromise that works for both the cable companies and the companies that own the channels/streaming services. So I think this is an important piece of news. But the big piece of news there is that for folks who lost access to ESPN a week and a half ago,
they've got it. They've got some of it at least back right now.
Yeah, they're back. They're mostly back in business.
Wanted to talk a little bit about the SEC. Rough start for the SEC. Auburn, one of just two SEC teams to beat another Power 5 team. SEC's now 2-6 against Power 5 opponents. Mississippi State wins in overtime.
Auburn's game was the first loss by a Pac-12 team, right? I think the Pac-12 had been undefeated.
Arizona had lost earlier in the day in overtime.
And Stanford had lost a conference game, which doesn't, they'd lost to USC.
But, yeah, Mississippi State's was the first SEC win over a Power 5 school. That overtime win where they were much heavier favorites in that ball game than Auburn doesn't cover. So the SEC has not covered one game against a Power 5 team.
We're not.
Because Auburn nor Mississippi State covered.
We're not really an outlet for, I shouldn't say this on the air, we're not really an outlet for gambling advice. We're going to give you information. You can make your own decision if that's what you want to do. But we said on Friday, Bill.
Hadn't been a good start
for
the
SEC. How about this? But hold on. We said on Friday, Colorado, Auburn, and Alabama were three teams that the public overwhelmingly backing. Colorado -3.
Well, they went one, and we said 1-3.
We said 1-2, and at least one of them loses outright. Was our prediction?
Colorado was the only one to cover.
Colorado took care of business. They're maybe the biggest story in college sports through the first 2 weeks of
the
season.
Yeah, I think they are.
I mean, that game. Apparently, more people. Joel Klatt said this earlier today, and I think we'll have more numbers about it later. More people may have watched Colorado, Nebraska than Alabama, Texas on Saturday, which would be shocking. Part of that has to do with the number of homes ESPN is in after the Charter Spectrum deal,
right.
But and the Colorado-Nebraska game being on Fox and not on cable. But isn't that, I mean, what would you say to that? The idea that if maybe more people watch Colorado-Nebraska at big noon on Fox than the Alabama-Texas game at 6 o'clock on ESPN, like that to me is an indication
that's
the story going around, is that
that's
more
hard to believe.
Because
part
of it's because of the game being on Fox versus ESPN. The number of homes ESPN is in now, it's about half compared to
because of the Spectrum thing.
Well, that knocked about 15 million of ESPN's 72 million homes away. So I mean, but that's Joel Klatt said that earlier today. He would have access. He's a Fox employee. We'll have more numbers later, but sounds like Colorado, Nebraska.
I can also see a Fox person going, "Yeah, well, the numbers were down. We had better numbers."
We'll see later, but it sounds.
But anyway, my point is the SEC is you know, not off to a good start thus far. So, yeah, we can talk about that. I mean, Alabama losing to Texas. Texas A&M.
Oof.
Could not slow Miami down.
Does Auburn?
I mean, the SEC defenses don't look very good early on.
Did Auburn become a must-win game for A&M with the performance on Saturday?
I would sure think so. It's a home game.
It's a home game.
And now it's an 11 o'clock kick down in College Station.
I just wonder what the reaction would be if Auburn went on the road to College Station in a week and a half and won that game. Like I think that maybe
that
is it Jimbo's last stand potentially? Is that where – because coaching searches, I mean, they're starting early. You got to make your decision.
Yeah.
You need to know 6-7 weeks into the season, right, if you're keeping your head coach or not. It's harder than ever before to make a change, to decide to make a change in November and not punt the subsequent year. Just seems like with the new timeline, harder than ever before. So,
yep. Harsin was after – was it after Arkansas? Am I remembering
correctly? I believe Arkansas was Harsin's last game. Was that in October? I think that was an October loss.
It's funny that I can't remember something that happened just, you know, a year ago.
I think that was Halloween. I think Arkansas was Halloween weekend last year.
Arkansas, yeah. That's right. It was on Halloween.
It was Halloween weekend.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's right.
So, I mean, but I just think this is, you know, October, and maybe that's – maybe October is the month when you got to figure it out. A&M's got other tough games in, but no, that was shocking to see.
All right, we need to get to our first break again. Just underway here from Franklin Tire. Bill, Dan, Brian, Matthews from Auburn Sports. Love for you to join us, and the number to get you through, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
We'll get to our first break. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
At Dixie Electric
and AU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian, Matthews from AuburnSports.com here at Franklin Tire on East University Drive. Love for you to join us on the phone. I mean, if you need anything seen about with your vehicle, we'll see you in here. We always run into some familiar faces here at Franklin Tire. Unfortunately, we've seen some other faces run into other folks out here in front of us. Usually on rainy days. It's a beautiful day today. Brian, just your thoughts. I mean, we've been sitting here talking about it, but your thoughts on Saturday, that late Saturday, early Sunday game, and the implications following.
Well, first, on the positives, the defense got better from week one to week two, right? They worked on some things that they were struggling with, the alignment issues, the getting off blocks issues, and they played much better, and they bailed Auburn out time and time again when the offense put them in a bad situation. So I think that's a real positive. The other positive is Auburn went on the road, the long trip, the late night start, a brand new team with a 50% new roster, new coaches, new staff, and managed to pull off a win in a tough situation, right? A lot of things went against Auburn, but they came back with a win. So I think those are two really positive things. The things obviously they need to work on is on the offensive side of the ball, right? Quarterback play was below average or worse than that, really, for that entire game until that drive they put together right there at the end. You know, we're Peyton Thorne, came in and marched him down. I think he completed four straight passes on that drive, and I think he was sacked twice, maybe. So it was not.
I recall one just before a big play. Yeah, just before the first completion of Rivaldo.
Yeah, that third and 17 was after a sack.
I think it was Ferguson who asked Hugh Freeze at the press conference today about the play of the offensive line. I think some people thought.
I really thought that too tall in his first road start. Struggled.
He gave up, I think, two sacks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I think one of those was an alignment issue. The other one was just got beat. That happens sometimes. Big time college football, right?
I wonder if they will, if we'll see Britton Moore at left guard, at right tackle, or if they will just try to get too tall to work through it and keep him there at right tackle. Because I think they do like the left side of the offensive line as far as what they can do on the run game, Wade and Britton, when they're playing together. And so maybe they'll try to keep those two together. But if right tackle's an issue, Gunnar Britton is at least the second best option, you know, depending on how you view too tall. So I could see them deciding to move Britton back to the spot where he worked for a lot of the offseason too.
I think they're still going to move those guys around, and I don't think just because Isaiah, you know, had a some moments there, they're going to give up on him at right tackle. I think they'd love.
No, I don't think they will. He was just struggling, though. I thought the other night
he was. I did look at the drive chart there. They were sacked twice on that drive and managed to overcome those. So they're still making mistakes, but they managed to overcome them that time. But the quarterback play has to be more consistent. They've got to find a better match. I think a little bit too much is being put into, even though I wrote about it, is being put into the, you know, the
rotation.
Your
fault.
You helped, is what you're saying. You helped put too much in.
This is overblown by the media.
Well, I want to hear what he's saying.
I do too.
But, you know, the rotation, putting Robbie in, taking him back out, and all that stuff. I know it wasn't the way they designed it or wanted to do it, but the reason that happened was because both were playing poorly.
Because it wasn't working for either one, so they kept trying.
Right, they were trying to mix it up. So yeah, in hindsight, it doesn't look good, but there was a reason that was happening during the game. And the other thing offensively, and this is something we've heard back in the spring, and I don't think it gets talked about enough, and I'm not trying to, be mean to these players, but Eufries brought up the wide receivers again, that they've got to get better production out of those guys. He mentioned calling, I think, three or four long passes.
Well, I was wondering why Auburn didn't try more, because that's something that has really been a part of all of his offenses, is taking some deep shots. And, you know, not being there, you can't see the whole field.
Right.
Now, I've talked to a couple of people who were there, and they didn't see an awful lot of receivers getting a lot of separation. And that has to have something to do with that.
And that's got
to
be such an important part of that offense, right? And I think he said there was one where they looked on the quarterbacks looked on one side of the field, not the other, which was a mistake there. And then I think the other one was two or three times the receivers just lost their battle and couldn't get open in one-on-one coverage.
That's what I was wondering. I mean, because if, you know, you're not going to throw the ball down the field if there's not anybody open. You just don't want to throw it and go, okay, somebody come up with it. I mean, maybe you'll come up with some of those 50-50 or less than that chances, but that's a reason. So, and that takes a lot away, makes it tougher. If you can't stretch the defense, then that's tougher. You're more and more of the defensive players are going to be lining up closer to the line of scrimmage, make it tougher to run or throw short passes.
Okay, here it is. Yeah. I think we only called three and probably should have called more. Cal plays a little differently. There are two times that I thought early in the game, I know we had one real shot and we read a different side of the field. And then our receivers didn't win a few of the others that were called.
Mm-hmm.
They were in man coverage quite a bit, and they won some of those battles on us.
And that's what you've got to do. If you've got man coverage, you've got to be able to beat that defensive man to get the pass. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone lines. And Crawford is up first. Hey, Crawford.
Been too long, guys. How are y'all?
Doing fine. Yeah, it has been. It's been a while.
Been a while since last year. Well, Bill, you are my inspiration. You and I are the same age. And I said, well, I know Cameron and Kathy are going to be staying up watching this ball game. So I talked to my wife, Katie, and we said, we're going to try to do it. So, I got some big-time inspiration after the Alabama loss. I said, we're going to do this. So we started drinking water, and we made it through. And after the first series, we got a tremendous break with the quick whistle, because that's a touchdown.
Oh, you're not kidding. Yep. You're not kidding. You know, Auburn should have been in the 7-0 hole, you know, a minute into the game.
Nearly a disastrous start. Yeah. Like nearly an unimaginable. So, I mean, to get the ball first, turn it over for a score is about as bad as a road game can possibly start. And for Auburn to avoid that, it was a turnover, but it wasn't a turnover with Cal getting to run it back for a touchdown, which would have been just a nightmare opening for the game.
And the defense holds to a field goal, which was big, obviously, and then to come back and we score. But, you know, you have – it's 7-3, and I feel decent about it. But then they come down, and that Ott's a good running back, and thank God he got hurt. But, you know, it's 10-7 at halftime, and Katie says, well, I'm going to get a shot.
Can we make sure he's okay before
– Yeah.
Can we make sure he's okay before we thank God that he got hurt?
Yeah, Hugh mentioned today that he hopes the young man's fine.
Well, but at any rate, you know, there's no way we're supposed to win the ball game with four turnovers. There's no way possible. My best friend texted me yesterday, and he said he saw a stat that since 1978, teams with four or more turnovers and less than 15 first downs are 1-64 until last night.
Actually, that's 2018 to 2022. That's over the last 5 years. What surprised me, that tells you that that only 66 times in 5 years has a team had fewer than 15 first downs and four turnovers. I would have thought that would have happened more often than that. It tells you it's almost impossible to overcome those numbers.
And I was proud of the fourth quarter coming back like we did. The only time I got upset is when Jarquez fumbles is right on our sideline. Run a damn play.
Yeah, you know, you're right. How did somebody not notice that?
We run a play. I mean, they can't review it.
They weren't in any hurry to ask about it. It's like it took them until Auburn took their time to go, oh, can you check that?
Yeah, I mean, unreal. So at any rate, but defense, tell you what, Eugene Asante is a man.
Yeah, and he is the SEC Defensive Player of the Week.
Well, it should have been. I mean, it shouldn't have been anybody close to him. But at any rate, as they said this morning, the wins, wins, wins. So, War Eagle, I'll talk to you all soon. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Crawford. Yeah, some very good points.
Among the many awesome things we saw from Eugene Asante on Saturday night, speaking of the Ott injury, I know Nathan King had it on Twitter. Another Auburn player, I guess, was trash-talking Ott after he was knocked to the ground, and Asante runs over and pushes the player away.
I'm glad he did. Yeah. I was not happy.
I loved to see that too. You know what Asante represents, and we got to talk to him after Hugh Freeze was finished today. I turned to Brian as soon as Asante got finished. I said he is easy to root for. This is an easy guy to like, and it's amazing to see the success. And he was, that's a position we were worried about, right?
You still are. He's the guy right now. Now Larry Nixon banged up a little bit. You know, who's the other one right now?
I mean, who is the best player on Auburn's defense at this moment, if you had to rank
right now?
One through two, and who's number one?
I mean, I think there were – I mean, DJ James is tough, too.
I would say Eugene Asante, and then you've got
Marcus Harris and
DJ James have probably been your – top three guys.
Marcus
DJ,
I'd say through two
one,
games.
One at each level.
Through two games, yeah, Marcus, Eugene, and,
yeah, Mark,
and DJ.
Marcus had a heck of a
in,
ball
in
game,
some
too.
Order. Yeah, Marcus Harris was sensational. I do wonder, we'll learn more about Cal as the season goes on, too. I do wonder how their run game stacks up against some of the run games Auburn's going to face in the SEC.
The SEC hasn't been overwhelming, but I don't think the Cal's offensive line is as good as –
and
a few of the SEC offensive lines.
Yeah,
Auburn
and the Pac-12 may be as good as it's been in its final year.
Yeah, you're crazy. Right. You're right. They're going out in style thus far. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Plenty of time for you to join in as we continue here with the Monday Drive from Franklin Tire.
1-1-3-9-0. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here at Franklin Tire. Love to hear from you, your thoughts. You want to look back at the weekend. Homecoming this Saturday seems odd to have homecoming this early, but hey, if you went to California, it's a serious trip back home. So a homecoming against Samford, 6 o'clock kick this Saturday. That's an ESPN Plus game.
Yeah, that's don't have those too often, do you?
No,
most of them are on
usually
TV
maybe one a year.
I mean, not on the right, yeah, on broadcast.
Yeah, so ESPN Plus. So if you don't have that in your package, you'll need to be at the ball game if you want to watch it.
Yeah, you do need to subscribe to ESPN Plus for Saturday's game. We got some times for the games the following Saturday. Auburn A&M, you mentioned earlier in the show, Bill, will be an 11 a.m. kick in College Station. That game becomes more important for Jimbo after dropping the game to Miami over the weekend. Bama Ole Miss is your 2:30 game on CBS that day. You've got Arkansas LSU that night. You've got another SEC game that night. Kentucky Vanderbilt, I believe, is also an 11 a.m. game from that. So let me just pull it up. I was trying to do it from memory, but there's too many games and I got them mixed up. The surprise is Mississippi State, South Carolina, a regular season SEC game, not on television. ESPN Plus / SEC wow. Network Plus will have South Carolina, Mississippi State at 3 o'clock. I don't know how many regular season SEC games will not make television this year and will go to the conference games. We'll go on to the plus, but yeah, finding that out earlier today that a state the September 23rd Mississippi State South Carolina game is going to be an SEC Network Plus game.
Oh, I wanted to mention too one of our most reliable listeners has a couple of tickets for Saturday's game. Nice. For the homecoming game. These are very good tickets. Over near scholarship seats on the east side.
Are we trying to give them to like a parent and a kid who doesn't get?
No. This time, I think he'd like to get maybe what he had in him, which isn't.
Oh, okay.
But I think the face value is not terribly high.
I'm not going to unmask anybody.
But
this
yeah,
time.
If you would like a couple of really good tickets for Saturday, we can put you in touch. So if you're looking for a couple of tickets, because hey, they're hard to find. Like we said, it's not on TV this weekend.
Did you get the sense?
Not on regular TV.
Let's talk a little more about Peyton and Robbie, because did you get the sense from Hugh Freeze's comments earlier today that we could see the quarterbacks used differently?
I think you will see them used differently than they were this past Saturday.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what that means. You know, Robbie did come in for a series.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't a whole lot of Auburn drives to the red zone, so we can give it to Robbie opportunities. But I just think there will be less. I think it'll be a little bit more.
I don't think you'll see them in and out,
right.
The way they were.
Right.
I wonder if they might.
If
it works for one, right. Yes.
Yeah, I would think that the plan going into games could be more Peyton and Robbie on special occasions, fewer uses of Robbie,
or come in and have a drive, something like that.
But that's with the understanding that Peyton Thorne has to be productive when
he's
on the field. I think that Hugh Freeze going into the locker room at halftime Saturday night indicated, if Peyton Thorne's not playing well, they're not gonna. They're going to go to the backup. So
he said that before the season started. He said, we'll look at the stats, and that'll play a big part. And if you look at the stats after that second game, you're not really happy with any of your quarterbacks at the moment. So we'll see.
And he doesn't sound thrilled with the wide receiver room either. I mean, that was a comment that stood out to me. Was it's not about. I sort of had to press him about the other guys because Hugh Freeze said we got to get more touches for 5 and 6. And I'm out here. Well, what about
3 and 14 and 8? And,
yeah,
well, we haven't seen 8 yet. But it sounds like it's
eight's
Mardner.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I mean, because we haven't seen Nick Mardner or Coy Moore yet, right?
Not that I recall.
And how much is Shorter played?
Shorter has been in the game some. Now, not being there, I couldn't see every single play. I don't know. How much did Caleb Burton play Saturday night?
I don't know how much Caleb Burton played in the first half in the opener. I think they sort of went to him when they
Malcolm Johnson was the guy that barely played until very late in the first game. And again, when you only run 25 plays midway through the third quarter, there aren't a lot of snaps for anybody,
right?
Especially if you're trying to rotate some guys.
And that's also where Hugh Freeze has talked about needing to get better at the position overall, right? Like not just mm-hmm. this year, but moving forward. Like that's a position where if Auburn's going to get to where Hugh Freeze wants them to be, the talent in the wide receiver room needs to be greater than it is right now.
Yeah. And they've got a terrific group already coming in, and they're recruiting some other guys, which will be a big plus. That's one of the things that nobody really talks about. The focus is usually on the quarterbacks or a lot on the offensive line, but that continues to be an issue. And if they're getting man coverage against, no offense to Cal, but they're going to get a lot of man coverage in the SEC.
They are. If they can't get open against these teams, then you're going to continue to see man coverage.
Yep.
And the fans, and people can say, throw the ball downfield, throw the ball over the middle. Well, if you don't have anybody open, you don't want to throw the ball.
You know, I thought the coverage
downfield or over the middle.
I thought the coverage on the third and long to Rivaldo
was pretty good.
Yeah, you know, and that ball had to be, you know, that ball was short, and Rivaldo had to make a great play on it. I mean, Auburn.
Oh, that was a great catch.
Yes, that was
a great catch. He came around the guy and caught the pass that was underthrown. Great. It wasn't like an intentional back shoulder throw.
That was like a
back knee throw.
Yeah, we see web gems, right? That was like an outfielder.
Right. You're not kidding.
That was an outfielder.
Did he scoop it? Yes.
Lost one in the lights and then recovered at the end, but it was not exactly where it was a completion. It didn't seem to be on target to whatever that target was, but
now Peyton seemed uncomfortable a lot during the game.
Yeah. He does not look like a quarterback that has 26 starts for a Big Ten team. So
no, you're right.
You would expect more poise, more decisive moves. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't expect him to go out there and do what he did on the first series where he basically gave the ball to the defensive lineman who ran in for a touchdown, basically a linebacker, whatever it was.
Oh, yeah, it should have been. But, I mean, right. And again, you know, as part of that, he's running to the right. The ball's in his right hand. He switches the ball to the inside to his left hand, and then it comes out.
I don't know what was going on with that play. I watched it over and over again. I can't understand how a veteran quarterback does something like that on the opening series of a game.
I just
don't understand what was going on there.
All right, we'll get to our final break here of hour number one. Love for you to join in. Again, we're coming to you from Franklin Tire here on East University. You can give us a call, 334-321-1390.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And we're coming to you from Franklin Tire here on East University, where they've been taking care of folks. Well, here at this location, over four decades, they've been doing it since 1970. I thought I remembered that from one of the commercials way, way, way back.
Yeah.
But, great folks here, and they do a great job of taking care of everyone and their vehicles. All right, we'd love for you to join in. I mean, some lively conversation there in hour number one as, Auburn hanging, coming from behind to pull out a 14-10 win at Cal. Meanwhile, Alabama dropping its largest home loss in Nick Saban's coaching career. The first double-digit loss he has ever suffered at home as a head coach.
Incredible stat.
I mean, a couple of
numbers that blew my mind. We were talking about the one that made the rounds from the Auburn game, the 1-65. I thought the stat the fellow from the AP had that I showed you guys, first time that a team had in one football game 12 or fewer first downs, 4 or more turnovers, and 230 yards of total offense or less, and won the football game. First time a bowl subdivision team did that since Troy in 2001 beat, I think, somebody else in the Sun Belt. I forget who the opponent was.
It doesn't happen. No. I mean, you don't win games when you do that. Credit to the Auburn defense for giving Auburn the opportunity. And then Cal's probably, I mean, they've got to be holding tryouts for a place kicker.
Yeah.
Today, too.
That was tough.
Yeah.
And he made the 51-yarder.
He did.
That's what's got
to – And then it got wiped off the board.
That's what's got to be more frustrating.
He drilled that one. I mean, it was dead. It would have been good from 55.
I mean, that's the thing, is to see a guy showcase the potential, at least, to do it. But you got to –
And then he was off either side.
I was going to say, but
He wasn't just hooking him.
Do you want a big leg full of potential, or do you want consistency at that position? I feel like a lot of coaches are going to say, give me the most consistent option.
Then you'll know that when we get to such and such yard line, we've got 3 points. Before that, we're going for it. All right. We'd love to hear from you.
They got a lot of kids at Berkeley that played soccer. I'm convinced of it. I'm sure there's a lot of former soccer players.
There's got to be somebody.
I think you pull a Mike Leach and you have an open tryout for a full scholarship, at some point in the next week. Yeah, they got to fix that.
All right, let's get to the phone, 334-321-1390. And we've got JR up first. Hey, JR.
Hey, fellas. me run something on y'all right quick. So all right. He gets up there and kills Storm just about every press conference since the scrimmages. And I've noticed almost on the last two on the two games they played, every time he throws the ball, the wide receiver got a defender right on him. I mean, other than the Jay Fair passes, had nobody really been able to get no separation. And I don't know. I just don't get that why he keeps killing him publicly, killing him like that. Just, I mean, he just looks like he's out there playing, looking over his shoulder the whole time to me. He just don't look comfortable like he can breathe. I don't know. It's I think I would do it a little different. He don't look like he needs to be done that way, but I guess, you know, maybe that's how he is. He's just a brutally honest coach, and I get that part of it. But
yeah, you know what's interesting? A week ago – no, I'm sorry, but a week ago, Brian, remember Hugh Freeze said maybe he needs to adjust the way he coaches Peyton because I think, yes, that has been Hugh's way is to be brutally honest. And he talked about Peyton seeming to tighten up a little bit, and it looked that way again Saturday. But, I mean, I think it's very hard for Hugh Freeze not to point out, hey, he had a guy here, and you know, he looked the other way or something like that. I don't think he's trying to, you know, denigrate Peyton Thorne. I think he expects more out of Peyton and is trying to do that. But, yes, he talked last week about having to maybe adjust the way that he handles
it. I don't think he's killing him. I think we're just so used to all the – boring, dumb things that coaches would say about their quarterbacks.
All right, well, let me ask you this, Brian. Well, so,
see a guy
so Robbie's out there. I've watched Robbie mess up several times, but you hadn't had him heard him say a word about that.
Well, I think part of that – well, yeah, he did talk about Robbie not playing well, too, but I think part of that is Peyton won the starting job, so he's going out of his way to try to boost up Robbie's confidence for finishing second. And he's praised Peyton a lot for his leadership and his hard work and all that other stuff. But I just think this is the way Hugh Freeze is. It's not just with his quarterbacks. He talks about all his players, I think, pretty fairly. And most of the things with Peyton that he's been getting onto him about is just his decision-making, which is something you would expect a veteran quarterback to do better with. And that's what he talked about Peyton again today. It was you know, not looking on the right side of the field on the deep ball. It was
the RPO decision sometimes, yeah, right? You know, deciding to give or take.
Yeah. So
yeah, I like the honesty. I mean, it just don't seem like he can handle it very well to me. I don't know. It just seems like he's really pressing and looking over his shoulder when he's out there.
I think there's the possibility that Thorne is, you know, that his performance is being affected by the potential of being replaced by Robbie Ashford. Like there's you know, that's maybe what's going on. I think you also got to consider he's learning a new offense and he's playing with a team that is playing their second game together. They were assembled, you know, by catalog basically, you know, this offseason, right? I mean, they found guys.
And I think you brought up a great point, JR, that Jay Fair and then Hugh said it today, Jay Fair and Javarius Johnson are the only two receivers that appear to be able to create some separation.
Yeah.
And those are slot guys. They're not guys that are generally, you know, on the outside. They're going to be making some of those deeper patterns.
He said he didn't confirm that, but I think they've got to, right? If those guys on the outside are getting open and winning those one-on-one matchups, you got to make a move. I also want to add, I agree with JR. He doesn't look, and I mentioned this, he doesn't look like a guy that's had 26 starts in the Big Ten for a Big Ten school coming in here. You just don't see that with him. I think part of it, this is my opinion, I don't know this, but it's my opinion that Peyton really wants to do good at Auburn, right? He's putting a lot of pressure on himself to come down to here to this big SEC school and these coaches, and he wants to perform real well, and it's just not happening, and he's getting frustrated. So I think, you know, deep breath, you know, go out there and because the times when he plays the best are the times when they're just cutting him loose, so to speak, right?
I get the feeling – we appreciate the phone call, JR. Great stuff. I get the feeling that if Hugh Freeze thought that Auburn's receivers were getting open a lot and this was the productivity they were getting from the quarterback position, he'd be a lot harder on Peyton Thorne publicly and privately. I think a lot of this is influenced by the understanding that the offensive line is coming together and Hugh Freeze thought they played pretty well. I thought there were issues at tackle at times. And then at wide receiver, I just don't know – aside from 5 and 6, and I thought it was really telling that it wasn't his response today, right? It was not, we got to find a way to get other guys involved other than 5 and 6.
No.
it's we got to get five and six the ball more.
They've got to get more touches.
Because they've clearly separated themselves through two games. And that could change between now and the end of the season. But right now, when you hear Hugh Freeze talk about receiving options, there's five, there's six.
And there's Fairweather.
There's Rivaldo Fairweather.
And Fairweather is basically a slot, too.
Yeah.
Right?
He's the slot.
He lines up in the slot. So if you're going to have those three guys on the field, you're going to have Fairweather and maybe Var in a slot and put Fair on the outside.
Yeah, that's what I would think. Jay's just a little thicker than Var.
And you can still run over the middle and inside routes with a guy lined up on the outside.
Oh, yeah.
Like there's nothing stopping. I think they love what Jay Fair can do underneath. We've seen a couple of plays now where Jay Fair gets an underneath ball and makes something happen. The touchdown was, it's a juiceless position right now aside from a couple of guys, Fair and Johnson. The Jays, right?
Yeah.
Are making things work.
Appreciate the call, JR. Let's get back to the phones. And Tex is next. Hey, Tex.
Okay. There's certain parts of your body, if they get tight, affect your performance. And I agree with Brian. I think Peyton is trying really, really hard instead of playing. They call it playing the game for a reason. Practice is to get ready for it. He should be playing. If he relaxes a little bit, I think he'll be fine. A couple things that I saw. He got on a few wide receivers for going the wrong way. Peyton did, coming back to the huddle. Number two, he missed three open, wide open guys that he never looked at during the game, and that's the part of not looking to the right side. Most really good quarterbacks walk to the line of scrimmage. They know the play. They look at the defense. They can pretty much tell you where they're going with the ball, who the guy is going to be open. And I think we may be looking at one and two before we actually know that three is going to be the guy that's open. And he's not getting enough time to be able to do that. So, look, I'm not a football coach. I play one in the recliner and in a certain section in the football stadium. So, the other thing that always bothers me is hearing people say we shouldn't have won the game. We were lucky to win the game. Look, only one thing ever determines the outcome of a game. Whoever has the most points at the end. And damn it, we had the final score.
Yeah.
We had the most points at the end. That means
It's not no just 14, who. Though, Tex.
Hey, Tex,
1982.
Not in the modern era.
Unforgiven is one of the great movies of the 90s, Tex, right? And at the end of that movie, Gene Hackman, I don't deserve this. Deserves got nothing to do with it, all right? It's got nothing to do with who wins that game.
Look, I think there's a lot of character that comes out of hanging on when you don't play very well on the road and you find a way to have more points at the end than they do. Yeah, we have problems. They had gummies the second game of the year under a new regime. Guess what? There's going to be more. I hate to break
that. Oh, yeah.
There are going to be additional problems as we go through. So defensive-wise, let me just add the other thing. We ran the football when we ran a play called counter where we pull two guys. We block in one direction with the other guys up front. Pull the two guys and run the tailback behind them. We ran it down their throat. That's what happened in the last 5 minutes of the game. So when we were one-on-one, if you look at almost every one of those formations, you cannot block six or seven with five. It's virtually impossible. And if the wrong guy turns the wrong way, then havoc is run upon you. So you don't get an opportunity to really be able to run your offensive play before it gets all busted up. So we have got to find a way to throw the football, to create a little room to run the football a little bit more, and then develop the balance. If we can't throw the football, every game's going to look like that. That's just my opinion. So,
One thing about that, you mentioned that if they didn't have the penalties and the turnovers and a couple of mistakes, that he felt like they could have run for over 200 yards in that game.
Well, the yard per carry was fine. Yeah. I mean, Auburn, they just couldn't keep from messing up. Either fumbling or penalties.
And it was great to see Jarquez back, although he is working his way into form, and that late fumble could have been really costly. Damari Alston still showing glimpses, and I'm buying all the stock you got in Jeremiah Cobb.
I was going to mention, you know who had the first two runs on the touchdown drive, right, to win it, right? Who got it started?
It was Jeremiah Cobb.
Yes, it was. A true freshman in the game, and the most pivotal moment, he's the one that got that drive started.
We had a texter point out, speaking of the offensive line, it was mostly Britton at right tackle and right at guard on that last drive when Auburn went down the field as well. So that might be an indication that they're making.
It was Britton at right tackle, and who was at left guard?
Jeremiah Wright was playing left guard there.
I saw 77 in there.
On that last drive, so maybe that's a personnel change they made too.
Hey, one last thing. Paul Skeens is the greatest pitcher to ever come out of college baseball. If you don't believe me, just watch everything that happened in the draft. He was really good until his first outing in Double A.
He was.
Everybody has something like this go on. And guess what he did the next time? Two innings of shutout baseball. So, look, it's kids playing a game. And we've just got to find a way to play the game just a little bit better. I didn't enjoy being up till almost 1 o'clock in the morning.
Like the old days,
Not like 40 years ago.
No, back then good things might happen at 12 or 1 a.m.
Or we didn't know if they were good or bad.
Yeah.
I needed to be on the shot bus is where I needed to be. And so, I don't know how difficult. We used to ride a bus everywhere. We never got to fly anywhere. And you didn't get credit for having to be on the bus for 8 hours to go play. You got credit for how you played. And we didn't play very well, but in the end, it only matters who's got the most points at the end of the game. Somebody's going to call up and say, that's pumping sunshine. I don't care. We're 2-0. Just win, baby. I don't care if we win 14-10 the rest of the year, every game. As long as we win them all.
No,
all right.
I take that. You're right, but I've seen a lot of games
that were worse than 3-2 when you win 3-2. All right, so I mean, I agree with you, Tex, and you know the distance thing, like the air travel is so commonplace, you know, within these especially the highest level of college football now. I think the time in the hotel, the downtime.
As he said, next time if they do that, he's not gonna go out on Thursday. You want to have less downtime than they did.
Flying to Berkeley versus flying to College Station is just a matter of a couple extra hours in the air.
Flying to Berkeley is not a whole lot different than busing to South Carolina.
Yeah. You're going to be flying to Norman, Oklahoma on a pretty regular basis once they're in the league. Like, but the amount of time away from home and the time spent, multiple nights in a hotel, that's where Hugh Freeze was worried about it wearing on his team.
Appreciate the call, Tex.
Great stuff, Tex.
We need to get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to join in. Again, we're at Franklin Tire here on the Monday edition of The Drive. You can call us 334-321-1390. We're right back.
It's been from the Abbey
with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews. We got a full bank of calls. Let's get back to them, and I think G is up first. Hey, G.
Hey, guys. Dan, one of the things he said was California probably loves soccer out there, and I thought the same thing. Surely those guys can find a better kicker on their soccer team. But anyway, I thought that was pretty funny. There's a couple of things. You know, if you go back and you look at football scores over the years, especially 2010, how many close games did we have back then? We don't really dwell on that. A win, like they say, a win is a win. And then something else that kind of I thought about when Alabama was playing Texas, what is the highest ranked team that Alabama has, say, in the first couple of games, what is the highest ranked team that they have played, say, in the last 10 years? At a conference, who have they played? Things like every time they play somebody, it's a down year for that team.
Yes. And yeah. They played they some finally, teams that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Got a name or something, but yet when they
have
play
done
them,
some,
they're down.
Yeah, we can look that up. They probably played a team that was ranked around where Texas was, but it was a team that was losing everything from the year before and headed for a tough season.
Well, in 17, they opened with that Florida State team that was in the top five.
Yeah, they were, and they were awful.
And I think it was Jimbo's last year at Florida State where Francois injures his leg was it Francois? Remember that quarterback they had?
Yeah, like, I don't remember who it was, but you're right.
Florida State's quarterback gets injured in the first half. Alabama runs him off the field. And Florida State is they've just started to recover in the last year or so from the damage done that season. But no, it's been I think some of this might have something to do with the quality of the Texas team.
Yeah, well, I think they're always talking about Texas is back, and I never believe it. I said just show me. But if you go into Alabama and you beat them at home, that's hard to do, That's hard to do, and there was so much hype on it. So this may be this is a team that's got lots of talent, and they may do very well when it comes to the end.
And the pressure shifts to – well, for Texas, they got to figure out a Big 12 schedule in their final year in that conference. Pressure shifts to Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss going to Alabama – on that's the same day as the Auburn A&M game. That's the
right.
That's the 2:30 game on the 23rd. Auburn A&M at 11. Ole Miss at Alabama at 2:30. That's
Alabama had better play better defense than they did Saturday.
Or that's a very dangerous game for a guy who. And you know what? You wonder if Sark gave Kiffin something of a blueprint for how to attack Alabama defensively if Ole Miss has the personnel
are pretty tight too.
Well, looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, Gene. Good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. That is the number to get you through, and let's get back to the phone. Jeremy is up next. Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah, hey, guys. Almost had a perfect weekend. We had Auburn win, Alabama lose, Braves clinched the playoff spot. I saw him sipping champagne in the locker room. Saints won, and I just couldn't get the Falcons to cooperate. So not going to complain too much.
I thought the Falcons won. Did I miss that?
He's a Saints fan.
Yeah, I'm a Saints fan.
Saints won.
I got you. I'm sorry.
I needed the Falcons to drop that one. I don't want Bryce Young to do very well, but I needed the Falcons to drop it. The swapping of the quarterbacks thing, other than the fact that I'm looking at my phone wondering if Chandler Cox is still on the roster, their usage when you swap them. Like, when you're so predictable, when you bring them into the game, I don't know what you're trying to accomplish by swapping them out. Like, at some point, you've got to put Robbie into the game and just let him drop back and throw the ball a couple of times. And you've got to – look, Peyton ran a zone read a couple of times and looked fairly well doing it. And I don't know what you gain by swapping them out if you're just going to run the same three plays when you bring Robbie into the ballgame.
Avoiding predictability is key if you're going to have a change of pace quarterback. I don't know if you watched.
I think avoiding predictability in the whole game. How often did Auburn throw on first down?
Not much.
I don't know how often Auburn threw the
ball
on first
very,
down. And the avoiding. I mean, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say some of it. Look, I'm not real still not comfortable with our offensive line, and our coaches may not be either. I do think there's something to be said for how they looked on that last drive. The predictability aspect just bothers me. Like, it shouldn't be that hard to be a little more dynamic with the play calls when you're rotating guys in there.
I think the biggest issue with predictability to me was, at least from Saturday night's game, was running it virtually every time Robbie Ashford came in. I know they attempted a couple of throws, I think Robbie was 1 for 4.
One for three for 0 yards.
One of the two was the ball that was nearly intercepted. So I think maybe they'll reevaluate. And there's the question of whether or not it damages Peyton's confidence and or ability to get into a rhythm. I think they'll reevaluate that and find a role for Robbie, but I wonder if it'll change kind of drastically.
If you don't trust him to throw the football, he would be just as well off to put a running back there, run the wildcat. Like there's 100 other things you could do besides rotate a guy into the ball game that you're only going to run two plays.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Yeah, you're right. If you're going to do that, it'd be nice just to have somebody else in the backfield take a snap and move your receiver out, move your quarterback out.
And I think the way Cal defended Robbie Ashford when he was in the game, if his role doesn't change, that's how every team will defend.
Oh, yeah.
When Cal goes into the game.
Robbie, I'm just looking at the numbers here. Robbie was in for 15 plays, attempted 3 passes, ran the ball 4 times, and handed off the other 8 times. So that was his.
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback off a text real quick, and I'm going to get gone. I have seen us lose enough ball games over the year that I thought we should probably win. That I don't care if we still won; that we should probably lose.
that's right.
We went down to Baton Rouge and couldn't kick field goals inside of a barn one year, and I'm not going to worry with the other team screwing up. Like,
oh no.
That is part of the game, and I'm going to take everyone I can get because we haven't had enough of them recently to complain. So chalk it up, go on about our business, and hope that we can improve. You know, you've got this. I think the schedule lays out well where Samford's coming up this weekend. You've got a chance to work on some things before you go to College Station.
Yep.
This will be the week that you can kind of clean some things up, and then hopefully you go to College Station and look better. Because after Saturday, if you can't look better against Texas A&M, you're not going to look better against anybody else.
Now, A&M begins, and we appreciate the phone call, Jeremy, and anyone else who was there.
She was giving her opinion, too.
With Jeremy, whoever that was, also chiming in. But we appreciate it. No, great stuff. But, no, that A&M, that's maybe the toughest. I didn't want to gender the baby.
No, you're right.
The toughest 4-game stretch anybody plays all season, according to where teams were ranked in the preseason, A&M, Georgia, LSU, Ole Miss, mm-hmm. in 5 weeks, you play those 4 games.
Yep. You have an off week there after Georgia, so that's a little helpful there. But
4
yes.
games in 5 weeks, all 4 of those teams were in the preseason AP top 25. You want wrinkles ironed out before, because any big questions you have about this team after the A&M game, it's going to be harder to get answers. We'll see what LSU is. They got Mississippi State on Saturday. I think that's one of the state. LSU and Tennessee, Florida, are two of the really interesting games this upcoming Saturday. What is Tennessee, and what is Florida in the swamp in that game? And LSU's got a chance to get people to forget about Florida State when they take on Florida State.
Loses that game, oh boy.
Oh, I think Billy Napier could be. Well, they're an underdog.
Oh yeah,
and
they should be.
I think that's it's not an easy schedule. Florida's playing. I mean, you think about it. Florida's playing 8 SEC games, and Florida State and Utah. I mean, it's 10 Power 5 opponents. There's some
stuff.
Some really advantageous schedule. I think Colorado deserves credit for their schedule. The scheduling Nebraska and TCU at a conference and playing a 9-game Pac-12 schedule. I mean, that's 11 Power 5 opponents and a high-level in-state group of 5, Colorado State. That's Colorado's
schedule. Is Travis Hunter going to make it through the season playing 100 plays a game?
It's 120-something.
I know. Playing 100 plays a game on both sides of the ball.
I think he's an NFL defensive back. I don't know how much offense he'll play in the NFL, and he's played his way into a situation where he seems like one of the top 5 players in the country right now through a couple of games.
Oh, yeah, I think there's a
– I don't know how long it lasts.
Yeah, you just wonder.
But he could be doing this for a long time.
I know we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We're running a little behind. Spectre, if you can, hang on. We've got Spectre and John holding. You'll be up when we come back here on the Monday Drive from Franklin Tire. You're from Franklin Tire, and let's get right back to the phones. And Spectre's been hanging on for a while. Hey, Spectre, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Dan, let me start off with you. I heard you talking to Doug this morning. And you just had to change one word. Instead of fix, you should have said shoes. But that would have been fine. And I'm not going to repeat. Go ahead.
What did I say?
You said fix.
You said you wasn't going to repeat it.
Instead of shoes, horses. When you were talking about Franklin
Tire. You're talking about Frank. I mean, yeah, I did do the Franklin Tire, the horse joke.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that was funny. Anyway, Jeremy just about took all my thunder, and Tex took most of it, too. I agree with everything Tex said except for 99%. I agree with him 99% of what he said, except for the sunshine part.
That's like a Yogi Berra quote. I agree with everything he said except for 99% of it.
Yeah. But anyway, I'll just go with this. Bill, you know I've been questioning Peyton Thorne for the last couple of months, wondering about why he left Michigan State. And it's obvious to me something's wrong upstairs with him, that his concentration is completely off. He's baffled when he gets in there, and all of a sudden he has a good moment, and then it disappears. Kind of reminds me back in the day. Bill, you may remember Steve Sachs, second baseman for the Dodgers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all of a sudden he just couldn't throw the ball to first.
Could not throw the ball to first base. And he got over it, but it took him a while. But anyway, with that being said, I think Coach Freeze should just take Robbie and start developing him right now and get this Peyton Thorne situation out of the way, because it doesn't look like it's going to happen to Samford. Samford ain't going to be a test for either one of these quarterbacks. A&M is going to be actually the test. So if I was Freeze, I would go ahead and start developing Robbie right now.
I think we're going to need to see Peyton Thorne struggle a lot more than he already has for Hugh Freeze to pull the plug on this experiment and go with Robbie Ashford. And I think some of that's about Peyton, and some of that's about Robbie. I mean, some of that's about what you've seen from Robbie in the first two games.
Well, I heard what Coach said about Peyton and why he was pulling him in and out like that. He saw the same thing.
Yeah.
Maybe he pulled him out to talk to him on the sideline and said, look, you need to do this, do this, do that. And then put him back in. But it just doesn't seem to be working.
Yeah. But let's also remember Robbie was 1 of 3 for 0 yards, ran, I think, 4 times for 8 yards. Is that right? Yeah, 4 times for 8 yards. So it's not like
it was a poor.
Just tore it up.
Y'all still there?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah, it was a poor performance by the offense. Absolutely. Yes. I mean, I was surprised in the offense. There were some missed tackles, missed blocks. I mean, Robbie almost had the first down, but the tight end just ran by his block and turned around like he was going to catch the ball. And Robbie was trying to get the first down. But stuff like that, I mean, penalties, turnovers. I tell you what, you know, you're talking about a mental block. If California's kicker didn't have a mental block that he had, we'd have lost that game.
Oh no, there were any number of moments that could have gone the other way for Auburn. I mean,
there was nothing Auburn did to make him miss those field goals.
Oh no, no, you're right.
Oh but no, anyway. between the missed kicks, between the way Cal couldn't take advantage of favorable field position, between the turnovers by Auburn, like any number of things could have gone wrong for Auburn that reversed the outcome of that game. Spectre, I did not see enough from Robbie Ashford on Saturday to give me hope that things will get better if he plays instead of Peyton. That's not to say Peyton doesn't need to get better, but the 15 plays we saw from Robbie didn't lead you to believe that he's the answer right now to fix this offense.
I'm not saying he's the answer. I'm saying he's got to start getting coaching to the point where it's 90% coaching. I think they're just splitting it up and just making it 50-50 between him and Peyton. And if you're going to have to pick one of the quarterbacks and say, I'm going to stick with you and this is what we're going to do. But just splitting it up like that, I thought Robbie was going to come in the red zone. I didn't know he was going to be coming in and out like he did. I thought he was going to be a red zone quarterback.
Well, maybe the problem was they couldn't get to the red zone.
Yeah, that's the problem. Well, anyway, that's all I got.
Appreciate it, Spector. 334-321-1390.
One other thing we should mention, you know, we talked about Peyton struggling that game, but that final drive completed four straight passes to move Auburn down the field and threw the game-winning touchdown pass there with around 4 minutes.
And you hope that that ending can be something that you build on. Yeah. This wouldn't be the time that you come out against Samford and go, okay, we're gonna give you a game off.
And fumbles by the running backs aren't on Peyton Thorne either.
When
running backs
– No, it wasn't fumbles on the exchange.
Yes, when running backs are letting the ball go and ending drives via turnover, that's not on the quarterback. And that's something, you know, multiple drives in the second half. You talk about Cal could have made some – you know, Cal left some points on the board via special teams. Auburn probably left some points on the board ending drives prematurely, either – I mean, not getting the fourth down, which can be – you know, that's something that's more worrisome because that isn't a, you know, a game-to-game. Like, that can be a trend. Fumbles are – I mean, you see years where teams fumble the ball a lot, but generally fumbles game-to-game are fluky. Like, you can have four fumbles in one game, none in the next game. We see that all the time. So, I guess the reassuring thing about Auburn's turnover – like, I'd be a lot more alarmed if Auburn had thrown four interceptions rather than four fumbles because you feel like fumbles are maybe a little bit more – in the moment and not something that you worry about creating a trend.
Right.
I mean, you look at Auburn's rush attempts other than, I mean, I'll take out the sacks. I mean, but I mean, in the rush attempts, Auburn averaged well over 5 yards per run.
I mean, Jarquez 4.8, Damari 6.4, Jeremiah Cobb 6.7.
And Batie had one carry for six.
Yeah. So
they're averaging about six.
They're moving the ball.
A carry.
And you also got to remember two holding penalties, two false starts. All those things just combined together just kill that offense.
We'll get another call before we get to our final break of the afternoon. And John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. I heard the prior caller. I don't know why we would question the acumen of Peyton Thorne. He may not have played well on Saturday, but I think it's proven he's a pretty decent quarterback. But a couple of thoughts I had. I was at the game, saw Auburn people all over the Bay Area. Congrats to Auburn on how we traveled. But one thought I had with the new – it was incredible. But one thought
heard
I had –
Heard you were at the Giants game, John. Is that true?
That is true, yes. Affirmative.
There was a pretty good Auburn crowd at the Giants game, too.
Heard a rumor you were in the house.
Yes, that that is true. Yes, I saw quite a few Auburn people over there. Oracle Park's incredible. But just one thought I had was it seems to me there's some pressure maybe to be a little more efficient on offense. With the new clock rules, it just seems like you have far more or less at-bats. I think Auburn had one possession in the game in the third quarter. So, and I piggyback that to say I don't know if we have any deep threats, but it seems like there may need to be maybe a little more vertical downfield attack and a few more big plays to kind of open things up, because you really got to be able to take advantage of your possessions when you have so limited few possessions in a game. And I just like your thoughts if there's any maybe big play deep threat receivers we have that can actually go vertical. That's all I really got, guys.
Well,
I appreciate it, John.
Jair Shorter was brought in to be that guy. He averaged an FBS best
27 plus a catch.
Just haven't seen it yet, right? And
the first thing you have to do is you got to be able to get off the line if they're playing press man.
Right.
You got to be able to do that. And Auburn has some undersized guys that have speed, but they're not the kind of guys you think of as being able to immediately get off the line and get deep.
And they got a bunch of big dudes that are strong. I mean, Jair looks almost like a linebacker.
Yep.
Jay Fair caught the deep ball against UMass in the first half, I think early in the second half of that game.
It was first play of the second half. Offensive play for Auburn.
They ran a deep ball to Malcolm, but I feel like they were also they were working in some other guys off the bench when Malcolm caught that pass from Holden against UMass. But that was a 30-yard deep ball. I wonder if Malcolm Johnson Jr. was on the field more early. In week two, right?
I couldn't really tell as much.
I believe the nearly intercepted ball from Robbie was intended for Malcolm.
Malcolm had 13 snaps. Jair had 18 snaps.
And again, remember,
Camden
this is out of what, 52?
Snaps. Yeah. So that they mixed him in there a lot. Amari Kelly, 19 snaps.
Yeah, I saw Amari in there a good bit. I thought it was Amari that was
30,
the target on
30,
that
36 for Shane Hooks. So.
Right. Yeah,
I don't know if there's one player you'd point to and say, you know, he's going to emerge.
Yeah, we need him. If he's in the game, all of a sudden Auburn will have the deep threat.
I feel like they have to think that they have to have expected more from Shane Hooks, considering how much he's playing. But he's not, you know, he can't give himself the ball. Right. Like some of that's on everybody else.
Yeah, it's not just all their fault, right? There's a lot of things going on. But to be honest with you, Auburn's big play receivers might be playing high school football right now. I mean, that's just the way it is. I just think this is going to be a process. They did the best they could in the portal to get some guys in here, and it just hasn't really worked out all the way yet. We'll see how it develops. I don't want to say it isn't going to happen, but I just feel like it's going to be a process rebuilding that room.
334-321-1390. Let's get one more call before our final break. And Jerry is up next. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Since I called last, I noticed that we had a commitment from DeAndre Carter from California.
Yes.
And I was just curious as to the ranking of the best players that we've signed so far.
You mean that are committed in this class so far?
Right, committed to the class.
Yeah, he ranks pretty high up there. I think overall, DeMarcus Riddick, the linebacker.
I would have guessed Perry Thompson. Yeah, would have been.
Perry's up there too, but DeMarcus is the highest-rated kid in this class. He's from Clayton, Alabama. He's going to be a big physical Mike linebacker, I think, eventually, or maybe a Willie. And then another guy, Joseph Phillips, is going to be a great pass rusher. He's from Tuskegee. So two of those linebackers are rated really high. Jamarion Burnett, the running back from Andalusia, is ranked very high in our rankings. Jalen Crawford was the one I was thinking of, a really talented cornerback, rated high. Perry Thompson, you mentioned. Jalua Solomon, another really talented guy who could play DB or wide receiver. T.J. Lindsey's a talented defensive line. They got a bunch of highly rated dudes, more so than Auburn's had in quite a while. But DeAndre Carter is a big physical lineman. He's around 350-ish pounds, probably an interior guy, guard, I would think, maybe right tackle, and a guy who's probably going to have to come in here and reshape his body a little bit. I don't think he's a step in and play as a true freshman type, but like most offensive linemen, he's a little bit of a developmental guy, but a guy who has that really high upside.
Yeah, and I saw somewhere where we had the number one linebacker class in the country.
They need it.
Yeah, that they probably like to get another one. They could really use a another pass rusher there. D'Angelo Barber, we didn't mention, the other linebacker commitment from Penson. He's the guy I was thinking of that's more that Mike guy, that if anybody steps in and plays as a true freshman, it may be him, just because he's such a physical player and has such a nose for that ball inside the Mike position where Auburn's, I think, struggling a little bit. That's not where Eugene Asante plays. He plays that Willie position. But, yeah,
well,
I think this is a great linebacker class.
We've got room to add plenty more.
Oh, you're right about that.
All right, guys.
Appreciate the call, Jerry. All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we head toward home here on the Monday Drive from Franklin Tire.
Vending machines are fun.